tonight we talk a bit more done deals and ask, before the World Cup kicks off, can we expect more, eh? No? However, the main event of the show is something a bit different. Having dissected the dark horses last week, this evening we deal with the big sides and England. The teams everyone expects to make the quarterfinals. We won't actually be going through the teams ourselves here in the bunker. Instead, we've assembled a crack team of serious analysts and myself who will rant for 3 minutes as to why their chosen team will win the World Cup. The most convincing guest will obtain the Tripper's backing throughout the tournament. So, let's get ready to rumble! Right, first up is Ryan McTernan, a.k.a. Ryan McTrippy, and he's going to tell us why South Ingerpoolton will win the World Cup. Ryan, your 3 minutes start now.
Okay, when I first received the message that I would have to justify how England would win the World Cup, I kind of shat the bed a little bit, but then I watched the game on Sunday and turned everything around, and I, in fact, prepared something that I think will pretty much affiliate my thoughts with how England are going to win the World Cup.
Oh, this looks lovely.
Obviously, no one can see this, but
it's a flow chart.
I'll scan it, right? So here we go.
Okay.
So, I was going to like try and do some kind of tactical analysis of Hodgson, but too much. I think he's too smart for that, and I wouldn't really get it, okay? So, we're going to go straight lines, 4-4-2. Straight lines. What go in straight lines? Trains. Trains. Trains are efficient. They're better than buses. No bullshitting on trains. No twists. Straight, well, there is some twists, but they always like remain the same kind of twist. So that's where your wingers come in. Because they twist in like the bends on a train line, okay? Choo-choo, I drew a little train there. You don't really see steam trains anymore. Like, dinosaurs, Roy the Dinosaur Hodgson. Bit offensive, you know. They say that, you know, this is... But I have to say, dinosaurs are badass. You don't fuck with a dinosaur. So, you know, England are pretty badass from that one. Liverpool are badass. Why are Liverpool badass? Oh, yeah. And I've never seen a dinosaur not win the World Cup. So, you know.
Flawless.
Yeah, so Liverpool are badass, right? Why are Liverpool badass? Everyone's like, oh, Hodgson, play like Liverpool. So he did, but he didn't like, you know, 4-3-3, none of that shit. Penalties, you got Lambert, Gerrard, Lampard, Rooney. Basically, to have penalties, you got to draw, like I did. To draw, you got to draw. And they're going to bore teams into submission. They're not really going to attack, but they're going to defend kind of. And the team's just like, can't be arsed. Play for penalties. Up steps Ricky Lambert and Gerrard. England are going to like win every... I predicted that like 3 points might be enough if Uruguay win the other two games against those other... Whatever. So, you know, couple of Zs, sleepy. Hodgson anagram. H Godson. He has the power of nature. He caused that weather storm the other day because he was like, Honduras are getting on top of me here.
He has the power of nature.
I call upon you! Thunderstorm, right? Okay. He has the power. We are England or Poulton. Tra-la-la-la-la. Make us dream. He took that too literally because I can't stay fucking awake watching him. Singing. Eurovision. Last time Austria won was 1966 when Wingland? Yeah, Wingland won the World Cup. Wingland. I don't know why I put that in. UKIP. Suarez is a racist. Racists don't deserve anything in this world except stoning. 2014, the year of the horse in the Chinese calendar. Nothing to do with this, but I think people forget about that, and I don't hear people talking about the animals of the year anymore. Indy Kayla. If he can do it, so can Roy Hodgson. The KFC. Patrick Stewart. His birthday is on July the 13th, the same day as the World Cup final.
We're going to have to rush
same
it.
With Talisa. Five, Hendo is boss. Last minute penalty. Gerrard is going to score the winner. England are going to win the World Cup.
Excellent. Right.
Quality. Well done, fella. Right. Okay. Next up is Marco Lopez, a.k.a. at Footy Marcal, and he is going to tell us why his native Portugal can claim the prize. Marco, your 3 minutes start now.
Okay, so why could they win? Obviously, one of the key things is the influence of Ronaldo, because he's really come to the fore in delivering and qualifying. If you have a look at the way that they came through the qualifying rounds, he's really become very good in this current reign under Paulo Bento, the current Portugal coach. For some strange reason, even though the team lacks its superstars from what we remember of back in the World Cup in 2006, which arguably the best chance they've had, they've still got a very good international record. You look at the way that they've played against, in particular, Spain in Euro 2012. I'd argue that out of all the teams that Spain played in Euro 2012, that was the team that they struggled most against was Portugal. And the funny thing is with Portugal is historically tough groups are better for them. So Euro 2000, Euro 2004, Euro 2008, the World Cup in 2010, Euro 2012, they've always seemed to have a better run against difficult opposition in the groups. And I think it's because it just puts the team under a lot of pressure to start playing well from the get-go. The other thing is, I think tactically, because it's ironic, I don't find this Portugal team very creative, but I think in a way that suits them, because I think you could find them being very defensively solid. They've got a very, very good the back four that sort of sets up very defensively. They've got a young kid, William Carvalho, who could come in and really dominate from a defensive point of view. So their strategy is going to be very much park the bus, hitting the counter, which isn't very pretty, no, and they're not going to be everyone's favorite team to watch. But they could be quite capable of particularly against the stronger teams who they're not expected to do well against, to actually surprise them. So it's anything is possible. Germany have a couple of injuries. You've got a dream. You've got to look at it and see if it was Croatia in 98, Korea in 2002, Uruguay in 2010, why not Portugal in 2014, and maybe the whole way. You never know.
That's quality, Marco. Thanks a million, man. Appreciate that. Thanks for the feedback. Good stuff, fella. Right, we have Argentina next. The case will be put by Argentinian Scotsman John Ritchie. Tell us, John, why your adopted nation will win.
It's an interesting one, because when I initially looked at it, I didn't think they would, and now I've convinced myself that they will. The reason why I didn't think they would was because of largely their defence and their keeper. Their keeper is a guy called Sergio Romero, and he's probably one you've all heard of. He's had a really dodgy season in League One with Monaco. He's not impressed at all, and I think they're going to let him go. Argentina, they've never really been known for good goalkeepers, and it's odd because everywhere else they produce greats of the game. You've got guys like Maradona, Batistuta, even guys like Diego Simeone, who's probably one of the finest defensive midfielders I've ever seen play. But goalkeepers, I can't think of one that I've made a lasting impression. Defensively, they look a little bit unbalanced. I mean, they've got Ezequiel Gari, I believe he's now off to Bayern Munich. Marcus Rojo, Pablo Zabaleta, they're really great players, but they've got weak links such as Di Michaelis, Federico Fernandez, and even now lately, Hugo Campagnaro. They've all had mixed seasons coupled with really bad individual mistakes. For me, as a defensive unit to work, you need to kind of rely on all three or four players working in harmony with the keeper as a unit. And for me, it's just a side that they've kind of got badly exposed, and I think one of the managers will probably target in the tournament. And then if you factor into the manager, you've got a guy called Alejandro Sabella or Alex Sabella, and he's someone of a Northern legend. He played for like Sheffield United and Leeds. But Sabella, he's done nothing of note in the game. He was a bang average player. He's only managed in the Argentine League, and he looks like Paul fucking Daniels. There's everything just did not like about the guy. As soon as I look at him, I think, fuck off, not him on my screen. But then actually, he's not done too bad of a job with the team itself. But then what made me think that they could start winning it was, if you look at their midfield, it's a mixed bag, but it's packed with quality. They've got Mascherano, Di Maria, Maxi Rodriguez. They've got a guy called Enzo Perez, who I'm really excited about. And they've even got Biglia, who's at Lazio, on his day. And I just think that potentially they can cause teams problems. They'll keep the ball well. They're tactically very, very clever. And the interesting thing is that as Mascherano's gotten older and he's lost a little bit of his pace, not much, but a little, he's still that mean-looking bastard that we all loved. You all remember Maxi's like 50-yard sliding tackles and his eyes. He was just a crazy bastard. And for me, he's probably one of the keys in Argentina's potential success. And with working with Busquets, I think he's just enhanced his defensive play even further if that was possible. So he's really the key. I mentioned Enzo Perez.
20 seconds, John.
He's going to go from strength to strength, but the real reason they're going to win is probably a brilliant forward line. They've got Aguero, Higuain, Messi, Lavezzi, Palcio. They've got all these players, and these guys can win games out of nothing.
Especially three,
Lionel Messi. And now they're managing to get the best out of Lionel Messi.
One brilliant.
And if you
done.
Can get the best out of Lionel Messi, they can use their medical conditions.
Wonderful. Wonderful, John. Thanks a million, fella. That's great work.
Love you guys.
Thanks, fella. Appreciate it. Right, next up is Anthony Williams, a.k.a. at Going Juan Loco, and he's going to tell us why Spain and this Spanish team won't be beaten and will win back-to-back World Cups. Anthony.
Right, well, mainly because the last person who scored a goal against them was in the knockout rounds of a World Cup was Zinedine Zidane. In the knockout rounds of any tournament, sorry. So they've gone 8 years without conceding in a knockout game, which is fucking scary when you think about it. I think they've conceded 6 goals overall between Euro 2008 up until now. So they've got by far the best defence there, even if it doesn't look like it on paper. They've got probably the most medals there. They've got a shit ton of players who've just played in the Champions League final. They've got probably the best international midfield of all time. Possibly the best international player of the last 10 years in Iniesta. I don't think anyone's played as well in the tournament as he has over the course of the last decade. He's probably like the best player since Zidane on an international level. Their squad has won everything. It's ridiculous. I mean, even now with all the Barcelona players going out, I mean, Thiago isn't going, but they've got Koke going. They've got Javi Martinez from Bayern going. He's like won a treble last year. And they're going as backups to Iniesta and Xavi and just all the Barcelona. They've got Diego Costa going, so they don't have to play that fucking lummox up front. I mean, you've got Casillas, who's basically spent an entire season watching football, but still come away winning the European Cup. I mean, it's faintly ridiculous when you think about how much good shit they've got going on. I mean, the thing that went wrong at the Confederations Cup was they had to like put in Arbeloa, who obviously wasn't as good as good footballers are. So what they've done, they've got Aspilicueta to go in there instead of him. I mean, the thing is, I don't really like watching them. Because I find they've got so many players that like to come towards the ball and it gets really condensed, but you still don't get the ball off them. They still don't concede goals. They'll win every game 1-0 and they'll end up lifting a trophy at the end of it. Or maybe they'll show up in like one game. Like the performance against Italy in the Euros, the first half of that was, I don't remember a better international performance. That was like crazily good in the final of a match, and they just tore. Like Italy were probably the most enjoyable team to watch at the Euros, I thought, and they just fucking ripped them apart like they were nothing for 45 minutes. And then they did what Spain do, and they just kind of slowed it down to an absolute snail pace, kept the ball for ages, and scored 2 goals at the end. Just it was like they fucking cuckolded Italy. It was horrible. Well, unless you're a Spain fan. But I mean, they've basically got the rest of football in a chastity belt at the moment. And
15 until... seconds, fella.
What?
15 seconds, won't you?
10 now. 5.
In summation then, Anthony?
They're probably going to win it again.
Well done. Thanks, mate. That's great.
They've been football.
Okay, the next nation on our list is the Germans. So who better to ask than an Austrian? Here's Alex Geschirr, a.k.a. Alex the Great, on why Germany are going to win this World Cup, and he's promised to put down the Yogi Löw voodoo doll while he's doing it. Alex.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ. Thank you very much for that. Why they could win it? Well, the worst part is because everybody would love them to win it, except me, I guess. And that's a very horrible thought. Everybody will tell me, see, Alex, now you have it. It's the best team in the world. And this love for Germany that's going on worldwide at the moment is by far the weirdest thing going on. And they like, even popular in Austria now. There was a recent study where, like, the majority of the Austrians will support Germany at the World Cup, which is absolutely mad.
Yeah.
And... nobody really knows why this. I think this whole love started, you know, back in 2006 when they like showed the world how perfect they can like arrange a World Cup and how great they can play, and the buses work and there's no strike, and everybody loves it. For me, it would be a horrible thing, but of course they can win it because I mean, for me to be like a little bit serious, the main reason why Germany could win the World Cup is. it's a classic reason. It's they're a fucking tournament team. They have, they can develop this thing where they say let's win this. Let's keep going. Let's beat the first opponent. Let's beat the second one, and then they are on this absolutely mental. They develop this mental mentality where they say we win everything, and even without a striker in this squad, they can score goals suddenly, even in 20 minutes. So that's the main reason why I think there would be I would be afraid that they could win it. And I have this very smart. I have discovered this very smart plan by the German Federation, the DFB. Basically, it's all about Campo Bahia. Have you heard of this? Campo Bahia,
no.
Is this hotel complex where they are living now and where they're staying for at least the group stages. Campo Bahia, that means basically Campo means camp, which is funny that Germans send people into a camp, but okay. What could go wrong?
Jesus.
but it's a very smart thing because basically this whole fucking hotel was finished like minutes before the German team arrived. And have you ever been to a hotel that was like brand new? Have you ever been there? I've been to once, yeah. One or two. Nothing works in a fucking hotel. You know, it doesn't work. The showers don't work. Toilets don't work. Air conditioning doesn't work. So, I mean, I read they already got stuck on a ferry on the way to the hotel. So basically, what they do is like they live in three or four houses together in this hotel complex, and the older ones like Lahm, Mertesacker, Klose, they are like the captains of those houses, and they do this community thing, live together, and they have to fight this new hotel against everything that doesn't work in this new hotel. So somebody says, Philip, I can't sleep, you know, I'm allergic to the new paint in my room. And Paulie and Schweini get stuck in the elevator and have to, you know, find a way out there, and nobody can hear them, so they have to work together. And somebody's maybe taking a shit and telling Mertesacker that it doesn't flush.
Alex, it's really paining me to cut across.
So, together they have to find a solution, you know.
Okay, brilliant.
When they face the likes of Portugal, they say Ronaldo wouldn't get his arm into mate's toilet, you know, he wouldn't do that.
That's wonderful. Wonderful. Okay, right. We're now going to move on to Italy. And we have a contributor here, actually, in the studio, a guest of Italian extraction, Felipe. Pino Cassini, and he's going to have a word with us about Italy. So when you're ready, Phil, 3 minutes.
Okay, 3 minutes from now. Italy are going to win the World Cup quite simply because they have the best squad in the whole tournament. They're the best defence. They've arguably now got the best midfield with Verratti coming in and really solidifying that midfield. They weren't there in the Europeans. And then up front, they've added Immobile to it, and they have Insigne as well to play alongside him. And they played in a classic, old-fashioned, big man, little man combination and scored 100 million goals against Fluminense last night. Why the Italians always win tournament football? They'll draw the opening game with England, they'll then get a scaldy draw on the next one, and they'll win the next one and go through probably as runners up, just about getting through. And everyone will be saying, oh, this Italian team won't do it this time, they won't do it this time, I tell you, they won't do it this time. Yet they'll win and they'll win and they'll win, and all of a sudden they'll be in the semi-finals, and then all the Italian fans will go out to the World Cup because they don't go before the semi-finals. It's against their better nature to go to think. They don't like to be early for stuff like we we'll be thereabouts, you know what I mean. They've also got Prandelli, in fairness to him, has done an incredible job with the Italian side as the manager. He's led them to a major European tournament. His performance record in competitive games is excellent. His performance record in friendly games is horrific, as his 1-1 draw with Luxembourg there at the weekend testifies. And if you think like the English press are bad with Hodgson over his record of draws before they head out to the World Cup, imagine if he drew with Luxembourg or Liechtenstein in the lead up to the World Cup. They would have been papers to savour. But anyway, the Italians are all in good fettle and good stead. There's goals in the team, solid midfield, and then you look at the back four, and of all the teams in the World Cup, this back four is probably the most solid and the most consistent in terms of being defensively strong. The triangle of Buffon, Chiellini and Bonucci is just is phenomenal. Like any team would want them in the back four, and even then you look at the reserves and Sirigu, they have one of the best most underrated goalkeepers in Europe as well, and they just have quality right the way through. You've Barzagli as well to come into that side. You've got Abate. You've even got Mata who can drop into the back four and fill in as a centre back. You look then, you've got the imperious Pirlo with his wonder beard. Any Mount sporting that beard and the looks of a Pacino going into a World Cup in Brazil is going to have a great shout of winning anything. And how nice would it be to see Pirlo lift the World Cup at the end of this competition? More than anything, for the romance of the Cup and the whole lot, that's who you want to see. And yes, Trev, it won't be four times. I think it'll be five times should they win this one. But anyway, just to correct you on that.
Didn't say that.
You will in the edit. So to sum up, Italy are going to win the World Cup because I said so.
Excellent. And there's 33 seconds left and you're going to leave it at that.
I don't need to do anything.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks a million for that, Phil. That was wonderful. And you can see how much time you spent on it as well. It's great.
Yeah, so just when you think you're over, right? Trev, you're not getting away with this.
No.
So
no.
Get your Panini book out and you tell us why the host Nation. I'm stuck with the MHN going on here. So the home nation will win this World Cup in Brazil.
That's quality. Quality bit of hosting there from you in the middle. Right, it comes down to some simple things. Previous hosts that have won, 1930 Uruguay, 34 Italy, 66 England, 74 West Germany, 78 Argentina, 98 France. That's 6 out of 19 tournaments. Just over 31.5%, almost a third, have been won by major football powers in their own backyard. So history, stats, everything already stacked in Brazil's favour. Now, next thing you do is you look at the squad. You have a little look at that squad that's going to be trying to do the job. And under Luis Felipe Scolari's guidance, you've got in the defence maybe some of the more stellar performers that you're going to see around the place. Marcelo, Dani Alves, Mike Conn, Maxwell, Thiago Silva, David Luiz. Big names. Paulinho, Ramirez, Willian, Oscar in midfield. And up front, you've got Neymar and Fred and Hulk and people like that. Now, in Group A, which is going to consist of Cameroon, Croatia, Mexico and themselves, nobody can see past Brazil walking through that as the winners. Now, if they do win, they play the second place in Group B, which is going to be probably Chile or the Netherlands. And then after that, they're going to play probably, if you go by the predictions, possibly Uruguay, England or Italy, looking likely coming there. So it's hard to see past Brazil making a decent path and a nice little glorious exit for one of the teams that we've already mentioned earlier on. They've got an experienced coach. They've got players of quality who are either in or entering their prime. They have the considerable advantage of playing on home soil with a passionate crowd who's going to be willing them on. Liverpool have seen lately how vital that can be. They are five times champions of the world's biggest tournament. They are natural showmen, innate performers, born to be on stage, born to be the centre of attention as the cameras start whirling on the greatest show on earth. So, what have we got with Brazil? We've got Big Phil's reassuring avuncular tash. We've got the calm majesty of Thiago Silva. We've got the sideshow Bob tonsorial splendour of David Luiz. We've got the relentless efficiency and shithousing of Ramirez and Oscar. We've got the potential tournament owning of prince-in-waiting Neymar. And we've got the muscular magnificence of Hulk's gluteus maximus. It is written, it is Brazil, World Champions 2014.
Oh, that's quality, Trev.
We'll do
that's well done. Well done.
Thanks, man.
Well done.
I like contributing.
I enjoyed that, yeah.
I like making sentences.
That's the first time you've contributed all year.
I know. They were ideas of mine.
I know, that's wonderful.
I know, yeah.
It's wonderful stuff.
Yeah, thanks.
So now we decide who's going to win the World Cup on the back of that. And my vote definitely is going for Italy.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I do like Alex's the lad stuck in the lift.
Alex's German soap opera was fucking marvellous. I've been having so much
being
fun
Germany.
thinking of Poldy and Schweini stuck in the lift. I'm just this is the fun
knocking on the door. Please help us.
Oh wow, and helping each other with the blocked toilets. This is marvellous stuff. Okay, to get a rational discussion, going back,
Ryan did make a very good argument as to doing with trained dinosaurs and everything else. But Roy,
it's hard to argue with that.
That's very hard to argue with.
It was very, very logical based.
Bringing it around, the boredom, the whole lot. Mm.
there was more logic in a dinosaur taking a train than actually saying like this England team are going to win the World Cup. That was a hard fucking task.
Imagine, that was a tough task.
Imagine if England did win the World Cup.
But I can see it. I can see his fucking head.
I can see his moves. I can see his moves lifting the World Cup.
Gerrard will win that World Cup and he'll be like, I can't believe I'm fucking winning this with Roy Hodgson as the manager.
Yeah.
This is actually shit. I'm packing it in. Yeah. I'm probably packing it in anyway.
But seriously, is it something you can even consider? It's not, is it? It's not really, is it?
No, definitely not. 100% no.
Just no. So England don't look good.
And they could. They have such a good, talented squad.
What about Johnny Ritchie, shout of Argentina? How do we feel about that?
Do you know what, right? And all rants aside and the whole lot, when you look at it, they've beaten Brazil in Brazil. And they've won, I think they won the Copa America in Brazil, against Brazil in the final.
Yeah.
And of all the teams, they're the one with the most recent experience of actually beating a Brazilian team with a Brazilian crowd behind them. So, you know, looking at it, and they have Messi. And they've Messi, who's coming back on a long injury layoff. Like, take everything away and you just have Messi.
They are the team that I'd like to do as well. Just
top
by
heavy, they're really good. And it does get, it's good mid, great attack, good midfield. Defence
and Zabaleta,
and then the keeper, like Gus Johnson.
Molly, from what you've heard so far of the contributors, who are you most swayed by?
Well, regards England, I'd actually like to see him win the World Cup, strange enough.
Yeah,
probably because there's so many Liverpool players in the team, but I can't see that train getting out of the group stage station, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
let alone to the final.
Yeah, fair enough.
Argentina, they got Messi, but really, other than that, I don't know what I was saying, Guerrero and so on, but That's about it. I don't think they're going to win it. Out of all the teams mentioned, I think maybe Germany have the best chance of winning it. There's some fantastic young players coming through. You know, there's a great team unit there. So, yeah, my pick for the World Cup is going to be Germany.
Yeah, yeah. Alex, you were kind of forced into having to advocate Germany. And that was as we know, that's an example of the cruel, twisted mind of Philip Casey. Yeah. So, who would you tend to go towards if you had a choice in terms of
my money's on Italy.
Your money's on Italy. Okay.
Yeah. Basically, I think they're the only team that like a good package from the back to the front. They have like some terrific attacking possibilities, and they like a solid defense since the invention of the pizza. I don't know. Italy, I think, especially with Prandelli, who like changed a lot since he took over in 2000. What was 2 years ago? 2012. In my opinion, they will do it.
Yeah,
hard to argue with that. Right, I'm going to just ask the two gents. I know I've asked you, Phil, and I know you jokingly said Italy. Would you seriously say Italy as well?
No, I think bizarrely, I think this World Cup for boiling down to quite a small number of teams that can win it, I think it'll be a straight shootout in the end between Brazil and Argentina.
Yeah,
and that's just the way I think it falls. Now, depending on how the groups run and everything like that, I do think it'll end up as Brazil and Argentina. Mm. A passionate Brazil crowd behind Brazil will lift their game again another 10-15%, and I don't even think Phil Scolari has the best squad that he could have available, or the best selection of players. But you know, they're going to be driven on, and I think ultimately that weight of expectation will be the downfall of them in the final.
Right, you think they get that far and then sort of capitulate because of the pressure?
I think the pressure is going to be absolutely massive if they get to the final.
Okay,
and the expectation that they win it in front of their home crowd. Mm. Might just do them in the end.
Well, I would have gone for Germany or Argentina ahead of this, thinking about this, and then I convinced myself there when I was talking, because I heard it was just lovely hearing my own opinion. So I'm gone off on one here, thinking about myself. Ryan, if you had to choose one apart from Hodgie's England, who would you go for?
Before tonight, I was pretty sure it'd be Germany. It'd be a repeat of the 2002 final. I thought it was going to be Germany Brazil, but Phil put a very good case for Italy forward. Brazil, I can still see them winning it, but they're not really Brazil anymore. You know, they're very like, I've watched them a few times and I've been very bored, unfortunately, watching. They might win 4-0, but they're ironically gone quite German themselves. they'll win the match. They're hard to break down, but they'll still get a few goals. But Spain, like, no one's really mentioned Spain, but I don't know. I think they'd pick badly in the squad, to be honest.
Do you?
Haven't got enough pace, in my opinion. Not that, you know, pace is everything. But they don't really have a genuine option off the bench. Like, Navas, like, he doesn't really fit that Spain mould, but he'll still add something different. But Phil has really swayed me with Italy now, to be honest.
Okay.
He's really given me a good... I might back with... I think I will stick with England.
Do you know what? That's,
we'll go with Italy.
That's the perfect way to end that. Okay, let's move on then to our next little sequence, which is our chat about transfers. And we'll speak about deals that are already done or look like being virtually done. It's incredibly un-Liverpool like in some ways. We've got Emre Can, the deal is done. We seem to have played in a blinder there in terms of value for money and execution. Would that be fair to say, Molly?
Yeah, but to be honest, I don't really know much about this Emre Can guy. I didn't hear about him until about a month ago.
Yeah.
But going by YouTube, and of course, ever since I looked up Mark Gonzalez on YouTube, I don't trust that anymore. Yeah. He definitely looks like a decent player. And I know Phil raves and absolutely loves this guy. But from what I've seen of him, you know, he can play a few positions between defensive midfielder, central midfield, left back, even centre back. And that is something that Brendan Rodgers wants in his players. He wants them to be able to play a few positions. So he's only 20, which is, you know, that means he's plenty of room to improve still. So all in all, it looks like a fantastic signing.
Yeah.
The only slight issue I'd have with him is I know we've worked with his agent before, bringing in Nuri Sahin and Sami Yedioth. But both of these guys are now out of the club. Sahin back to Dortmund, and Yesel joined Trabzonspor today. So, you know, hopefully this will be third time lucky, really.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's they're all very fair points. Alex, given your now established love of all things Teutonic, what do you make of this Emre Can chap, and are you excited about the transfer?
I'm a bit 50-50 on Emre Can, because... I think he's a very talented player. I haven't seen too much of him this season because I didn't watch too much Bayer Leverkusen football. My problem with him is, my main problem would be that he didn't make it at Bayern Munich, obviously, which is, of course, unfair because that's a huge squad and a lot of competition in it. But Bayern Munich did not like... loan him out to Bayer Leverkusen. They sold him to them and had a buyback option, but they normally, when they like think a player really has it, my idea would be they usually like loaned it to another club, looked like how they developed, you know, they did it with Alaba, with Lahm, with Kroos. So that would be a little bit of concern that Bayern didn't really believe in him. And somebody on Twitter pointed out to me, Barry White, who's like running, he's working for the Bundesliga account, in the English one on Twitter. He said that he had many yellow cards in last season for Bayer Leverkusen. And I looked it up and it's like he had nine yellow cards in the Bundesliga, he had four in the Champions League and one in the cup, and even had like a yellow-red one in the Champions League. So that's like 14 yellow cards and one red, second yellow in total, which could be a little bit worrying because the football Bayer Leverkusen played and the pace in the German Bundesliga is a little bit slower than in the Premier League. So I guess... that he will take some time to fit in. I think he is a promising player because he's very versatile, can play different positions. My guess would be that he is like maybe a possible replacement for Lucas, but it won't be like Lucas will be away immediately after the summer. Maybe they want to give Lucas time to recover properly and then take a look who will be like the defensive midfielder in the squad.
Fair play, some very interesting points there. Touching on another point then that Alex made in terms of mentioning Lucas, Ryan, is it fair to say that this young man's arrival could actually be the death knell for Lucas Leiva, given that Can is a central midfielder, a natural DM, but he's also multi-capable?
There's been a lot of comparisons drawn between Emre Can or Can and Lucas lately. Statistically, I think they've both weighed up in around the same. I think Lucas might have edged it in a few areas, but I mean, people are touching on the point that, you know, Can has been booked a lot. I mean, he's got roughly the same amount of bookings as Lucas, but he's 7 years younger than him. So you can, in some way, try and coach that out of him, that kind of irrational lunge forward. I have seen a little bit of him, and then obviously, you know, whoever his opinion that I might, you know, say respect highly, Phil, and YouTube. He looks, you know, just some of his anticipation for tackles I thought looked quite clean, and he waits, which I don't think Lucas does. Lucas doesn't wait. He does kind of dive in there too quickly, but I do think that it could spell the end for Lucas in some ways. I mean, the only way Lucas works in our team is to play where Gerrard plays. You can't have him on the same pitch at the same time. Even if you've pushed Lucas ahead, we've seen that it doesn't work. Lucas, you know, he started in 5 of our 6 defeats, and he was a sub in the 6th. He started in 4 of our 5 draws, I think, and he was a sub in the 5th or something like that. So I do think that it's time for him to move on, because he's not mobile enough. He can't go past his player. Even when you drop him very far deep and don't expect him to go past his player, it still doesn't really, you know, he's drawn fouls in when he shouldn't be. I think Chan will eventually probably play there, yes, you know, taking over Gerrard, but even until then he can play in 3 of the midfield options that we see in the diamond and in the 4-3-3. I wrote a piece there a while ago how I think that the midfield will end up pretty much having a job to do in nearly every position that they're, you know, if you put Chan as the deepest, Henderson ahead of him and Coutinho, they'll all take turns in 1 dropping back, 2 going forward. I think eventually that's what we will kind of see. Like, I'm not going to say total football because I'll sound like a wanker, so I'll just say that. I'll just say that, you know, we're not going to have, I think eventually what Rodgers was aiming for in the front and in the midfield is where, you know, you put them in a position and you say, right, well, don't stay there.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to pick a player because he has to play there.
Yeah.
As good as Stevie is for us and as good as his passing is in some ways, you know, he has to stay there. And I think eventually when Stevie, you know, sadly starts to remove himself from the team, we'll have a midfield where it's not like, you know, okay, I have to stay here because I can't run 10 yards. Mm. You know, I can't make this tackle here. It'll just eventually be this kind of, you know,
fluid
machine, yeah, in my opinion. So yeah, I'm really, really excited for him because, you know, he's only 20. As you know, people have said, Rodgers can mould him now into the ideal midfielder he wants. And I really, really, really can't wait to see him playing for us now, to be honest.
Excellent. Well, another man that's being spoken about now as if it's almost a done deal, and I've been out of the loop, slowly dying for
there's
the last
there's
few
an
days.
Announcement tomorrow again.
There's an announcement tomorrow again. Wonderful.
Name.
So I'm gonna ask you about him, Molly. Becoming known as the love child of Xabi Alonso and Steven Gerrard there on Twitter. We talked about him last week in a bit of detail, but
one night in Istanbul.
Do we look like we're going to have at last a decent quality left fullback?
Yeah, and plus, I didn't realise how young this guy is. I think he's only something like 6 months older than John Flanagan. Mm. That's absolutely amazing how young this guy is and what he's already achieved in football.
Mm.
And I've seen him play a few times for Seville, and he's definitely a Rodgers type signing. He likes to attack pretty much from the left a lot. But he's also quite good defensively. He stands his ground a lot. He doesn't jump into tackles that easily. He wins the ball quite well. He doesn't get many bookings. He doesn't commit that many fouls. So he certainly looks like a player for the future. And on top of that, you know, Real Madrid wanted him. Chelsea wanted him. Man United wanted him. So for that fact alone, the fact that we got him, it's definitely exciting to have this guy on board.
Yeah, it's nice to be in those conversations again, all right, for sure. Alex, is he a man that you're aware of very much, or what would be your opinion on his, what looks like imminent arrival?
I don't really know much about him. I saw him, obviously, in the Europa League in like 2 or 3 games. Mm. I don't really follow the Spanish League very often.
Sure.
So I can't really comment on him. I'm happy that we get a new... Is this like really happening? I mean, is this for sure? Because my last information was that it's maybe hold up. That was like Twitter rumour. But if this is like really happening, then
I coach Costa, Alex, basically, from what I heard, the fee was actually agreed with Seville last Thursday, but they held off on completing it because they were dealing with Barcelona with the whole Rakitic deal. They wanted to move Rakitic on first. I think we're getting a player from Barcelona in exchange for that as well. So by the time, I suppose, listeners have listened to this pod, he's either signed and we look great, or he hasn't signed.
Or else he's signing in 48 hours.
Idiots.
We can take a bet.
There'll be some quick editing done. He's signing in 48 hours.
I'm just happy that we get a left back in.
Yeah.
I think it was a good season regarding left back, but still it's good to get some. I mean, the big question is what happens to I forgot his name, José Enrique.
Yeah.
But I think if somebody's something is happening on the fullback situation, then we can only like profit from it. So I'm up for it. I hope it works. If the guys are like that good, like everybody says, and he's young and he's an attacking fullback, then he'll definitely fit, in my opinion. But you never know.
Just on it, like again, it comes back to about José Enrique and Moreno. We got to keep in mind that we have Champions League football next season, and you're going to need as many very capable Premiership footballers. And the one thing I know, Enrique is not everyone's cup of tea, but he's more than capable of playing against the lesser teams in the actual league. And if you've got Moreno, who's a young kid who's coming in from Spain and is adapting to a new league or whatever, he'd probably be more comfortable in playing in the actual Champions League than say.
Yeah, look, if Enrique can come back and do what he's doing, he's an agreeably mad bastard and he does a job.
I was afraid Phil is going to say he'll learn something off José, and I was like, what can he teach him?
Instagramming, taking his top off.
Yeah. He learned topless photos, but
in all seriousness, like if Enrique and Moreno were your two left fulls going into next season, we'd be stronger at left fold than we have been in a long time. And I also think it would be to John Flanagan's betterment if he went to his natural side and was able to develop his attacking game on his more natural side than having to always cut in on his right foot, because he is predominantly right footed, given how good of a job that John Flanagan did. And like, I hate bashing Glenn Johnson.
Yeah, we've known.
But in reality, like, you look at Flanagan and you look at Johnson, and I would have more faith in John Flanagan playing a match if we have Moreno playing, because he's going to bomb on so much down the left hand side. That you can sort of alternate. You won't necessarily want to play with two bombing on fullbacks in some games. You want one to hold the line maybe a bit more defensively and be able to get back in quick to avoid being caught in transition, really, especially with other things that's going on. Wisdom, I know we're talking about Wisdom coming back, but there's also talk that Wisdom might go back out on loan again for another season with a Premiership side to try to develop on. And if you look at it logically, they're saying they're going to run Glenn Johnson's contract down as opposed to offering him a new deal. That maybe gives Wisdom another season to develop fully with a full set
with
of league games.
Studying him. Ryan Suso is rumoured to be in talks with Porto. Now, should we take a leaf out of what we mentioned this earlier on, Munich and Barca, who tend to sell with a low buyback clause, given that he's in the last year of his contract?
Very talented player, obviously. I mean, a lot of people have cited his lack of mobility, but I mean, I don't know if it's that much of an issue. Like, you know, he's very quick feet, he's a good passer. It probably doesn't suit at this stage. So if he does, you know what? People have doubted Rodgers and the committee, you know, quote-unquote, that their transfer incomings, but I think their outgoings have been pretty fucking great.
Hmm.
I can't really, not one would I say was a bad move, in my opinion.
Hmm.
Even the loan moves where he said, oh, you know, if we only had Barini coming off the bench, or if we only had whoever coming off the bench, like, for all we know, we could have had them coming off the bench, lose all those games, we'll finish fifth. Like, you know, football doesn't work like that, unfortunately, but obviously, logically, it doesn't really work like that at all. But I think if he goes, you know, I'm fine with it. Put in a buyback clause, yeah. If he develops his game, I mean, he could easily, well, not easily, but he plays that number 8 role for the Spain under 20s and the under 21s. He plays in beside a midfielder, deeper, and I think, you know, he could be good there. I mean, if Joe, like, he's no bigger, no smaller than Joe Allen, really, like, or Phil Coutinho. So, look, I think if he goes, you know, he had a good few months in Spain. There's question marks over his what's the word I'm looking for, attitude. So I think all in all, if he goes, I'm not going to cry about it. And I think buyback clause, yeah, why not, if it's worth the punt. But I don't know, Porto will probably sell him for 70 million or something in 3-4 years.
Alex, where do you stand the whole Suso debate?
It's a difficult one, because basically because of the season and how great it was, I totally forgot about him.
I think a lot of people do.
But if you remember the season before and the talent he showed in some games, you think would it really make sense to sell him now? Wouldn't it make more sense to give him like another year on loan? Or maybe even like only half a year and then try to get him in, It's difficult because basically only because a player is like, you know, talented and we think it's a good attacking player doesn't necessarily mean he fits the system and fits the way the other players play. And maybe we like already have too many strong young players, and if we want to get somebody in on that position, we maybe need a little bit more experience. So I don't know if the door is already really closed. As far as I know, that's a rumor as well still. But it's a tough one. I can't say. I wouldn't mind him having him in the squad next season, giving him some games at least, you know, in the cup games, but and bring him maybe on in some games. But I can't really say if he like is somebody to bring on in the 70th minute now. If he's is the player now that we need to really change a game.
Phil,
The reason why I think Suso might go is probably the emergence of Teixeira in Rodgers' eyes over the course of the season. The one thing I noticed about Teixeira, even in the game that he came in against Fulham, the one thing he has over Suso is he has pace. And coming back to what you say, if you're going to play a player that can play in the eight like Coutinho, the one thing that Teixeira has more than Suso is pace. He has the technical ability. He has goals in his locker as he's done over the course of the season with 21s and before when he was coming through the Sporting Lisbon ranks. And you just wonder, when Rodgers has looked at him, he's probably looked at and said, "We've got two players that are very similar level, very similar age group. I know one has gone out to Spain and done it, but in terms of the pace he can play with and the pace that I want the teams to play with, he actually isn't as quick as maybe I'd like to see in the midfielders that I have." And you know what? For what I'm going to use Suso over the course of the season, I can actually use Teixeira in that position. And if I sell Suso and get the money in, it means I've got more money in the transfer kitty to bring in the likes of somebody like an Alexis Sanchez forward down the line if they become available, or pay an extra $3 million for whoever I want to get in if that's what it's going to cost me. Again, looking at the Moreno deal, if we wanted to pay $15 million and actually we're going to pay say $20 million for him instead, right? Maybe those millions that we get for Suso on a small deal with a buyback clause in it means that we can actually do it. The other thing we've got to keep in mind is Suso's coming into the last season of his contract. So if he doesn't renew with us, which his agent has said he has no intentions of renewing with us because he doesn't think he's going to get enough game time, then we have no value come the end of next season.
And what about that idea of selling with a low buyback clause?
Yeah, I I'm all on for it. Young players can develop at different paces, and if he goes out and has two phenomenal seasons wherever it is, whether it's Porto, whether it's Valencia or somewhere like similar, and then we have an option to buy him back for $6-7 million, you know, we could save ourselves maybe $15 million trying to replace him.
Absolutely. You know, again, I'm just going to keep you on and we'll go to Molly with this thought. Yeah. You're never backwards about coming forwards and being definitive when you come to talk about football in general. Now, where do you stand on this idea of the World Cup is almost up and running? When it tends to get up and running, deals tend to go into close down, do they not? And an awful lot of the players that we're looking at certainly are present at that World Cup. Does that mean that once the balls start getting kicked in anger, we can just take our handy and relax for the 3 or 4 weeks and prepare for the next little onslaught?
Well, again, traditionally, you don't see many players that are at a World Cup completing deals while they're at the World Cup because they're in camp. And teams don't like to release them to do medicals because it takes their focus away from the games. And the games come at such quick succession over such a small period of time. If you tried to close a deal and there's only 3 days between your first and your second game, you won't want to release the player for that. And so for me, I thought if we didn't get a deal closed for a player that's at the World Cup by the weekend gone, then we weren't going to get a deal closed on the likes of Lallana or Shaqiri or whoever we're being rumoured with. And for that reason, I don't see a signing any player that's at the World Cup now until that team is eliminated from the World Cup.
Molly, is that fair enough that the rush that's on now, and we seem to be in a hurry to do business, is because an awful lot of the guys that we're looking at are going to be involved in this tournament?
Yeah, I say that point is quite true, Trevor. And not only that, we're probably worried that if we wait until after the World Cup, you know, players like Lallana or Shaqiri, they could absolutely shine at this World Cup, and that means their price goes up. That means you have to pay more after the World Cup. But I don't think our business will end while the World Cup is on. I think we've targeted these players who are due to go to the World Cup, and we're looking to pick them up before they go. because of that reason, just so that the value won't go up. But I think now that the World Cup kicks off, I wouldn't be surprised if a couple of names came out of players that are not going to the World Cup that we're looking to pick up.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, okay. I think we should wrap it up at that stage and we move on to the final little sequence of our show, which is listeners' questions. And our first one is from Connor, who wonders, if Brendan could run onto a pitch during a match and kick any player, who do you think it would be? Now, I know I have a
can you run into
this.
The director's box and kick a fucking sitting England man?
Yeah. So who do you think, Phil, if you had to pick one, who do you think he's going to go? Who do you think Brendan secretly has?
Who would I want? Or who do
No. Who would Brendan kick? It's not about your desires. Ooh. Who do you think there's a little bit of gripe going on there? A little bit of unspoken niggle, perhaps?
Gylfi Sigurdsson. Remember he took the money instead of... Remember?
Very good. Yeah. Very good. Any other shouts on the line there from Molly or Alex?
I think Pepe Reina. I think he would mind giving Pepe an outkicking, especially after that goodbye letter. And now he seems to be stuck with him with nowhere to send him.
Yes, that's. I think you might be onto something there. Next one's from Lucy, and Lucy asks, what's the best John Travolta film? She says she can't decide between Face Off, Pulp Fiction or Grease. I don't think necessarily any of them would be in my top shouts for John Travolta films. Alex, if I had to put you on the spot, what would you pick?
For me, that's Blowout by Brian De Palma.
Yeah, it's pretty brilliant, isn't it? It's pretty brilliant.
I love the movie.
Ryan, what would you pick if you had to pick a John Travolta movie?
Grease, yeah.
You're going with Grease.
Yeah, I mean...
Can you justify that from the man? Because I don't understand.
Sorry, fuck that. Saturday Night Fever.
Oh, I was just looking at the disgust there with you.
Face Off's a pretty good movie. In all okay. fairness, I do like Face Off, but... Yeah. Saturday Night Fever for me, it's
what the darkness.
Well, you know, well, it's like, you know,
it's not the dancing,
it's just in
it's
the dark.
Happy, you know, it's like, you know, Bee Gees, you know, and all that shit.
Whoa,
sing off.
You heard it here first. That was just gorgeous.
I know you very well. No, Ryan McTiernan's opening a whole new door.
I'm not going to spoil it, but you've got really fucking dark shit at the end of that film. Yeah. And then his brother's a priest, like.
Yeah, it's layers. Yeah, it's brilliant. Okay, right.
And the white suit.
And the white suit sells it for you.
Oh, man.
Have you ever tried a white suit or a light colour suit?
I wore a white suit before.
You didn't actually?
For my confirmation.
Oh, no. Brilliant. 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 The only time you ever looked innocent.
And a pair of spats.
Good spat.
I couldn't get a trilby to fit me because I was only 12.
I need some help here. And Sam Maguire's asked a question. Sam says, what do you recommend for man flu? And maybe you can or you can't notice, but I'm dying slowly in front of you all here. What do you recommend as a quick fix for man flu? Any sheds?
It's not only a bit of loving, to be honest. There's nothing better than a bit of loving after man flu.
Okay, right.
So 30 seconds of loving equals 10 minutes free of
man
flu.
Brilliant, and no pressure at all. Next question is from Gray. And Gray asks, Ryan, what is more annoying when you're at the football? The fat lad with the drum or the twat blowing a horn?
I presume this is like the English, you know, brass band.
I guess so. One of those.
Because, you know, the Germans and the Turks, they can bang the shit out of a drum and it sounds great. And
Will it not irritate the piss out of it?
Although Manolo gets in my nit.
Yeah, you're what?
You know, fucking Manolo, the Spanish drummer lad with his hat and his drum that he bangs all the time.
No, is he a character I should know?
Yeah, he's at every single Spanish game ever. And okay. they show him up in the stadium with his bass drum. Bum, 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 bum.
I thought that was a Colombian guy, no?
Wasn't he the board man?
He was on my tits as well.
I think it has to be the horns, because when you're watching a match, the last thing you want to hear is like...
And you will. You're going to hear it all.
Like, and what's
they're sponsored
one?
Now as well, aren't they? One?
Yeah.
Are they?
The self-preservation. You know, but you get it like, you know, boom, boom, and if you get it proper, like, you know, drum is much better.
That plus Hodgie plus England playing hodgeball, that's pretty hard.
Also wouldn't be so bad if it had that old do-do-do-do, and then the whole crowd went, charge! You could do this.
The Hunt.
The Hunt would be brilliant at the start of a match.
Wouldn't it?
Oh, I like him, Mody. I like it.
Over attack or something like that. That'd be excellent.
I think they do that in ice hockey or something, don't they? I think they do. Right, Neb is asking us, next one he asks us. He says, I sometimes wonder what makes dumb people dumb. Does anyone have any insight as to how they got that way? Does it evolve? Can you become more dumb over a period of time, do you think?
Yeah.
You think so?
No joke, yeah, I think you can. If you watch enough of certain TV shows, I think you can definitely, you can feel. No, I'm not even being funny. Like, I have definitely felt a period in my life where I'm like, I'm actually getting a bit fucking ticker here watching this.
Yeah.
And I've actually, I proofread, you know, as a job, and my spelling has gone worse since I've started proofreading. And I actually, I'm afraid that I'm developing dyslexia. That is a genuine shout, because I have lately, I got called out by the grammar police on Twitter for like 30,000 plus tweets, followers, and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe. And it was me plugging my article, and I got called out by the grammar police. So I actually am a bit concerned that I'm getting too overexposed to proofreading.
That's some nice insight there.
The grammar police tweet me every day, so I don't mind that. But I always thought, basically, if you're looking around the room and you're trying to figure out who the dumb person is, it's probably you. So
is that because the room is empty, Molly?
I'm currently looking in a mirror, Ryan.
Alex,
you should have a video conversation.
Yeah, for sure. Where do you stand on this whole idea of growing dumber, Alex? Do you think it's a possibility, or do you think you're just born with it?
Depends on where you live. In Austria.
Okay, very good.
I think that was spot on. I think if you like do, yeah. The question, I can only agree. If you like watch a lot of dumb television shows, they wake up and think like, what happened?
I tell you, it is.
I don't really have a scientific answer.
It's because you're watching too much shit TV, fella.
Yeah. Alex, last question then to you. Which would you rather do? Another horrible, horrible choice for you. Try to get the world record for bee covering, which I presume means literally covering them
bees,
up. Yeah. Or eat a pair of Hodges jocks after a day in the jungle. So basically, you've got some sweaty Hodgie jocks that you can, you know, just eat, chow down, or you try to cover the maximum amount of bees in world record history.
I'm a bee man.
Yeah, it's simple.
I can't do the sweaty.
No, I don't even want to touch that yet. Okay, and we're out.
I would still hope that if I don't move, the bees wouldn't like really recognize that they're sitting on me, so.
Strategy, I love it.
Wamba, I take the bees.
Okay, excellent. Thanks a lot.
How could you take the bees?
Lads. Right, lads, that's brilliant. Thanks a lot. Okay, lastly, some admin then. A big shout out to Astro Park as ever. If you want to play 5 or 7 side football, get onto them and book your game on www.astropark.ie. I cannot stress how good in a trippery way the World Cup previews, which have been published on the website, are. We've got a couple more to go before the big kickoff on Thursday, including one from me. I'm talking about Group G. We've had some great articles also in from our new and existing writers over the past week with more content. So please keep coming to the site and reading what you can see there. Lastly, we aren't going to record a pod next week as it's World Cup week and some of us aren't even in the country. So we are going to issue instead a best of listeners questions compilation from the past season. So get your requests in and we'll put as many as you can request in. Finally, your day trippers tonight were Ryan McTernan, Alex Cashier, Molly, Phil Casey and myself, Trev Denny. Obrigado.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Can you hear us? Jerome?
Yes, can you hear me? Yes, I can hear you.
No, we give over messing your bollocks here. Jerome, we're trying. Hang on, we try again, Jerome.